And on this week's Sound of Football, Chris Oakley gives his view on the Chelsea versus Manchester United match at the weekend. Chris Oakley picks out the key shocks and upsets from the FA Cup first round, and Chris Oakley looks ahead to the upcoming World Cup playoffs. Why so much Chris Oakley? All will be explained on this week's Sound of Football. And a very warm welcome once again to the Sound of Football, a special edition this week with myself, Chris Oakley, but that's all you're getting, just me. No Terry DeFellin or Graham Sibley this week. And the reason for that is because, as I speak to you now, it's the morning of Tuesday, the 10th of November, 2009. Last night, Monday night, we went online to record another show, as we always do for you, you wonderful people, on a Monday evening. But due to circumstances beyond our control, i.e. sort of technical problems, unfortunately, we were unable to finish recording of the show. It all just went horribly wrong, and we ended up with pretty much nothing with which we could base a show around, if you know what I mean. So so what this is a special, hastily recorded alternative, just me, kind of going through, well, all the stuff that we were talking about last night, which sadly you'll now not get to hear, but we thought we'd sort of give you something rather than nothing. So essentially last night, the first topic of discussion that we had was the big match of the weekend, Chelsea versus Manchester United, which, as I'm sure many of you will know by now, ended as a 1-0 win for Chelsea. Going into the match, Manu were without Berbatov, Ferdinand, Park Ji-sung, Hargreaves. Vidic was on the bench and never actually got onto the pitch at any stage in the game. Whereas Chelsea kind of only had, I think, one sort of injury worry going into the game. So one could say that Man United were the weaker team in terms of available first-choice players. But Man U also had this thing of not having won at Stamford Bridge for about 7.5 years. Personally, I don't know about Terry or Graham, but I kind of felt that Chelsea were, if any team were going to win, it was going to be Chelsea rather than Man United, just on sort of current form. And I was rather gratified to see that that's how it turned out in the end. It was a game in which I think both sides played well and showed their very, very good technical skills, their great passing, movement and so on. However, that only led to the two teams neutralising each other during the course of the match. And as Terry said in the recording last night, it was kind of a turgid affair in many ways. There was not much in terms of actual sort of shots on goal and that kind of thing until the goal went in. A good goal it was too for John Terry. And there was sort of doubts, I think, as to whether Drogba was offside at the time that Terry managed to head the ball past Van der Sar into the net. But nonetheless, the goal stood, and Chelsea went on to win 1-0. But it was all sort of fairly even-tempered, and both teams were quite balanced until the goal went in. And I think at the end, it all got a bit fraught and fractious, as is the case quite often in games between, well, top four sides, let's put it that way, if not Chelsea and Man U specifically. It all kicked off towards the end. Man U felt, I think, that some of the refereeing decisions didn't go in their favour, and indeed I think one or two of them they were probably right to say that with. There was the incident where Johnny Evans and Didier Drogba went up for a header. Johnny Evans got the higher ground, as it were, first, got up in the air first to meet the ball, but as he headed the ball, he actually thrust his foot, his studded foot, into the chest of Didier Drogba, which curiously left Drogba with a yellow card for diving. Actually, I have to say, having seen the incident on replay several times, I think there's actually something to that, but there's no doubt that Johnny Evans did stick his foot in Drogba's chest, and very painful, I'm sure it must have been. But my feeling is that Drogba, even as he fell to the ground, managed to throw in an extra little flourish there, a little extra dive, just to kind of accentuate the point. Just my personal view, you understand? And when he did hit the ground, he was laying there, like, twitching. It was very strange. It was almost like he got struck by a 4 million volt, you know, bolt of lightning or something. But anyway, off the field he went briefly. And as we were talking about last night, you know, his reputation, he doesn't do himself any favours, Didier Drogba. This whole thing of diving and whatnot doesn't really go in his favour, but there it is. So that incident was one of a few to sort of stir up a bit of animosity. And, well, let's put it this way. Fergie was rather unhappy, as you could predict, after the game. Once again, he was a bit sort of suspicious of the referee and how well he'd officiated the match, saying you lose faith in refereeing sometimes. It would appear that he's also probably not quite as likely to say that he's losing faith in his team's ability to score enough goals to win a game before the final whistle goes as well, but I don't suppose we'll hear him make too much of an issue of that. It looks like Fergie will escape any disciplinary action for those comments, although after the whole Alan Wiley affair, I don't see why the FA shouldn't sort of take that into consideration as well, really. As Terry was saying last night, there comes a point where I think there's a sort of tipping point where you have to sort of say, you know, you're not exactly leading by example here for your team or anyone. But anyway, Fergie also claimed that Man United had dominated the game, which I think was kind of laughable, because certainly in the first half, Chelsea had most of the decent play and possession and so on. Man U came into the second half, but I wouldn't say they dominated the game by a long stretch. So there we are. Rooney almost got himself into trouble because of all the hoo-ha at the end of the game, where it looked like all the refereeing decisions were going in Chelsea's favour. As he was trudging off the pitch, it was said that he mouthed the words 12 men to a camera, to a TV camera, as he was leaving the pitch, and apparently he's been warned of his conduct as a result. So there we are. So, but aside from all of that, the long and the short of it is that Chelsea beat Man United 1-0. That means Chelsea haven't now conceded a goal at home for over 14 and a half hours. And Man United now find themselves 5 points behind Chelsea at the top of the table. Chelsea, for my money, still look a little bit suspect to the back, a little bit sort of unfocused at times, but you know, a 1-0 win over Man U is a 1-0 win over Man U, as they say. So Chelsea, I'm sure, be well pleased with that result. Now then, next up, last night we were talking about just briefly about the match between Hull City and Stoke City, which finished a 2-1 win for Hull. Of course, we mentioned Phil Brown last week and tried to make a case for him and not being sacked, and tried to cast him in a more positive light than has been seen in some parts of the press recently. And I'm sure that particular campaign, you know, will have helped Hull to have won last, the weekend, say 2-1. Jimmy Bullard was making his home debut in the season. There's no doubt that I think he made a bit of a difference for their team. He looked very composed. His sort of positional sense, shall we say, was good. Terry felt that actually the scoreline somewhat flattered Hull, and that they were they still looked a bit desperate. And in fact, I wouldn't disagree with that. Actually, I mean, Stoke made the better start. Great goal from Matthew Etherington to put Stoke in front. At that point, I must admit, I thought that Stoke were probably going to then go at least two, if not three, up. But Hull came back into it. And again, as Terry said, it looks like Hull are quite a sort of spirited team, but they've got to do a lot of work in all kinds of areas of the pitch. I mean, looking at Hull in defence, they just look half asleep. They have no idea what's going on at all. Terry went so far as to say that that's actually the case for all parts of the Hull City team at the moment, and who could argue? But anyway, Phil Brown buys himself another. Stay of execution, shall we say. New chairman Adam Pearson has come in, and he's backed Phil Brown. And I know there's been a bit of discussion in the papers, I think a bit of sensationalism, sort of trying to find any crumb of negativity. I think what Adam Pearson, the new chairman, has said is that he's backing Phil Brown, but no one's safe at this club, which of course the tabloids and all the other gutter press have sort of thought, oh, that means he could be sacked. But you know, let's look at this for what it is, folks. But there it is. Apparently, he didn't come out for the sort of press conference afterwards and chatting to journalists and whatever. He sort of left that up to his cohort, who I think is Brian. Is it Brian Horton? I'm not sure. I'd have to check that. But anyway, yes. Apparently, he was off having a well-earned pint of Guinness in the bar, and well done to him for that. At least it's actually got Hull out of the bottom three, out of the relegation zone. They're now up. They're now one place, and indeed 1 point above the relegation zone. West Ham drop into the bottom three again after their 2-1 home defeat against Everton. So there it is. Phil Brown lives to see another match, at least in charge of Hull City in any case. Various FA Cup first round games going on at the weekend, plus the second round draw. Among the upsets in the FA Cup first round, well, we were talking about Northwich Victoria last week in our pod, and Terry, if you remember, was I'm not sure if it was last week or the week before actually, but I remember Terry sort of breaking out into sort of hysterical laughter at the thought that Charlton are now at a low enough level to actually be playing against Northwich Victoria at this stage of the FA Cup. And in fact, Northwich Victoria won 1-0 at the weekend, so that's Charlton out. And Hartlepool, similarly, they were at home to Kettering, and they lost, Hartlepool lost, that is, 1-0 to Kettering. Bath City also got a good away win. They won 2-0 at Grimsby, and Oxford United beat League One Yeovil 1-0. And I must admit, when I saw that result, I just went straight past it because for some part of my brain that still thinks that Oxford United are a league team, but of course they're not nowadays. But Yeovil Town are, and they managed to beat Yeovil, so well done to Oxford there. And amongst the other sort of notable results, Norwich City winning 7-0 at Porton Rovers. That was, I'm sure, the most sort of eye-catching tie out of all of those in the first round when the draw was made. But Norwich City, to their credit, are showing that they're rather a different proposition now to how they were at the beginning of the season, and a very convincing win for Norwich that was. And then there's the FA Cup second round draw that was made at the weekend, and amongst the sort of key ties there, Kettering, who beat Hartlepool, they are at home against Leeds United. Northwich Victoria, who I just said, beat Charlton. They will be playing Lincoln. AFC Wimbledon last night were playing against Millwall, and in fact, I say last night, that as in Monday night, and in fact Millwall won that one, so Millwall go on to play Staines Town. Bath City are at home to either Forest Green Rovers or Mansfield. So basically, that leaves Northwich, I should say, as the lowest ranked team left in the cup. So I'm sure we'll be keeping an eye on them in future podcasts. And the second round will be played on Saturday, the 28th of November. Okay, last night we also then moved on to the World Cup qualifiers, which are going on this Saturday in Europe. In any case, it's a two-leg series of playoffs, the first leg going on, say, Saturday, November the 14th, and the second leg being played on the 18th of November. The four European playoffs, just to remind you, Republic of Ireland against France, Portugal against Bosnia-Herzegovina, Greece against Ukraine, and Russia against Slovenia. Now, we mentioned last night the fact that there's a news story that sort of emerged over the other side of the channel, so to speak, in the last sort of couple of days, and that is Patrick Vieira complaining somewhat that he wasn't included in the French squad for these two playoffs. He feels, and perhaps with some justification, that that he's better suited to play in his position than anybody else in the country, but he's been left out. But he's not giving up hope of reaching the World Cup finals next year. But anyway, France against Ireland, and we discussed this a little last night. I think it was Graham's belief that he felt that Ireland could end up playing a sort of high scoring, say 2-2 draw in the first leg, which is entirely possible at home. But then when they go to France for the second leg, when they need the away goals, they end up losing or perhaps drawing 0-0 or something like that. And I think that's more than likely, I would have thought. Certainly an intriguing tie. And you know, France are there to be beaten. I think they've been sort of far from impressive at times in their qualifying campaign. The trouble with Ireland is, as we discussed last night, that they draw too many of their games and may end up drawing at least one of their two legs this time around. So we shall see on that one. Portugal against Bosnia-Herzegovina. Intriguing there, really, in that Real Madrid have announced that Ronaldo has not improved as far as his ankle injury is concerned. That's not improved in recent days. However, Carlos Queiroz has actually named Ronaldo in the Portugal side, which is, I'm not sure quite whether he's going to perhaps force Ronaldo to go out and limp out onto the field and play anyway, but time will tell, I'm sure. And in the other games, Greece against Ukraine, Russia, Slovenia. Little to choose between those two, but if you want my opinion, I think I might go for Greece actually in the first one. I don't know why, I just think that they're looking kind of quite solid at the moment. Ukraine look a little bit sort of weak at times. Russia, Slovenia, well, I think you've got to go with Russia on that one. And I think I'm even going to bother trying to explain my reasoning behind that and just leave it at that, because I think Russia just seemed to be the stronger side, full stop. Now then, there are, I think, fixtures that are going to be sort of shown on TV during the course of the week, one of which is the Asia... Oceania, that's right, Asia-Oceania playoff, New Zealand against Bahrain. That's for all of you listening in the UK, that's actually going to be on Eurosport, the second leg, and that is actually this Saturday, November the 14th. It was 0-0 from the first leg, which was on October the 10th, and basically Bahrain will be the away side in this second leg, and I think the way that they played in not only the first leg of the match against New Zealand, but also in the previous Asia qualifier against Saudi Arabia, if I remember rightly, they do have this kind of slightly boring tactic of being very, very defensive and just sort of parking the bus, so to speak, in front of the goal. But then in the second leg, when it has to be done, they kind of burst out and get the goals or a goal that's required. So I think they'll probably do the same again there. And we did discuss briefly in our first attempt the fact that my wife is from New Zealand, and far be it from me to sort of play down their chances of qualifying. I'd love to see New Zealand get to the World Cup again. They haven't been in the World Cup since 1982, which was their only appearance. And I'd love to see them qualify, but I'm just not sure they've got enough sort of strength in depth and temperament, frankly, to win that game. So we shall see. I'm inclined to go for Bahrain on that one. On a slightly higher billing, shall we say, is the South America against North and Central America playoff between Costa Rica and Uruguay. Two very evenly matched teams there, I think. Two teams that, in Costa Rica's case, I'm sure they started off the South American qualifying campaign at the top of their group, the hexagonal, shall we say, ahead of the likes of the USA and Mexico. Mind you, most teams were in front of Mexico at the start of the campaign, but they started off well, but then just drifted away. And whereas Uruguay have been pretty kind of consistent, but consistently average and somewhat uninspiring. My guess on that one is that Uruguay should win it, just because they've got bags more experience when it comes to these sort of games. They've played in playoffs for the World Cup finals in the past, so they should know what to do in this sort of circumstance. So I will go for Uruguay on that one. Finally, we come to Africa. Now, there's not playoffs going on in Africa over the next week, but just the final round of group games to decide who will go through to South Africa next year. We know two or three of the qualifiers. I'm just trying to work it out here. Two of the qualifiers we know so far. However, there are a few outstanding places left to be decided, of which this is the general broad brush overview that you need to know going into the last round of games there. Cameroon, they have got to beat Morocco to be absolutely certain of qualifying. A draw may be enough, but basically, if Cameroon beat Morocco in their last game, that means Gabon cannot qualify. Gabon could pip Cameroon to that qualifying place by beating Togo and hoping that Cameroon sort of slip up in some way. So it's looking like Cameroon will probably get there, because they're playing Morocco, who are bottom of Group 1 in Africa, and Morocco have been very poor in this final round on that particular continent. Gabon yet to qualify for a World Cup, and there's still a bit of a chance there for them. They've got to beat Togo and hope that Cameroon slip up. Tunisia in Group 2, similarly, to be absolutely certain of qualifying, Tunisia must win their last match, which is against Mozambique. But if Tunisia slip up, then Nigeria could pip them, but Nigeria must beat Kenya to stand a chance of going through. Nigeria leaving this a bit late, actually, and they've obviously a team that have been at many of the most recent World Cups, But Tunisia have been absent for some time. It looks like Tunisia may well get there. Again, if Tunisia draw, then that will open the door for Nigeria, but Nigeria must beat Kenya. And lastly, Algeria, they've got a more simplified set of circumstances going into their last game. Algeria only need to draw in their last game to go through to the World Cup finals, but, and it's a big but, that draw will have to be against Egypt, the African champions, who are currently second in the group. But Algeria are 3 points ahead of Egypt in the group. So as I say, a draw for Algeria will be enough. But if there's any kind of form guide to go by there, Algeria have already beaten Egypt 3-1 so far in this qualifying campaign. So looking quite good for Algeria, but this match is in Cairo, so who knows. So that one's still a little open as far as the final result that's concerned. That'll be the key game in Africa this week. And that pretty much wraps up everything we were going to talk about, really, or everything that we did talk about up to a point last night until it all went horribly wrong. I hope that this particular podcast has been a suitable enough alternative for you. Hopefully we'll all be back to normal again next week. We'll have Terry and Graham back, and we'll get all the circuitry sorted out, and we'll test all the hardware, and we'll fire all those technical staff that have failed us on this particular occasion. Don't you worry. But for now, this is me, Chris Oakley, saying thanks for listening. Join us again next week. We promise it will be better, honestly. And enjoy your football. See you again next week. Bye-bye.